You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Hi, Shane.
Hi, Amit. How are you going?
I'm well, thanks. And as usual, we will start with the top headlines of this week's edition of the Australian Jewish News. And Mal Khalifa is back to the headlines after a bipartisan motion in federal parliament to extradite her back to Australia.
Yes, there's been a bipartisan motion in federal parliament last week urging Israel to extradite Mal Khalifa. Of course, this court case, this extradition case in Israel has been going on for many years. Khalifa still faces 74 counts relating to child sexual abuse in Victoria when she was principal of Adas Israel School. She obviously, at the time, she was flown overnight to Israel, where she's been living since. And this extradition case in Israel is ongoing, and it's getting very, very frustrating for all involved. So this, I don't know, this is another effort at the top level in federal parliament to try and get the message across to leaders in Israel that something needs to happen very, very soon. So this motion, which was introduced by Liberal Wentworth MP Dave Sharma, who of course is a former Australian ambassador to Israel, it was also seconded by Labor member for McNamara Josh Burns. And the motion notes that over 5 years have elapsed and over 60 court hearings have been held in Israel since the extradition request was first lodged, without any significant progress having been made. Now, Khalifa's lawyers are due to cross-examine the latest psychiatric panel that has found Khalifa fit to face extradition proceedings, and that will happen probably later this month. Recalling that Khalifa has been found to feign mental illness to avoid extradition proceedings, Dave Sharma charged, "This behaviour is not only an affront to justice, it is deeply traumatic for the victims of this abuse, and it's damaging to Israel's reputation and is increasingly becoming a point of contention and friction in our otherwise positive and productive relationship with Israel." Echoing his sentiments, Burns referred to the recent open letter penned by the Zionist Federation of Australian President Jeremy Liebler to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which reminded the Israeli Prime Minister that friendship must go both ways. There were also welcome support for this motion by other politicians, including Katie Allen, Dr. Mike Friedlander, Julian Lisa, and Mark Dreyfus. Now, one of the three sisters who are some of the alleged victims of Khalifa, Dussie Ehrlich, told the Jewish News she felt very emotional and in awe of the stand taken by this motion passed at federal parliament. She said they spoke about this for close to 45 minutes in parliament in support of us, in support of all the victims of sexual abuse, and really made such a stand for it. It was so validating to be heard, she said. Following the motion, Israel's ambassador to Israel, Mark Sofer, also commented. He told us, "The entire issue causes so many of us, too, deep anguish. I dearly hope that it will soon come to an end and that justice will finally be served."
And that's quite an interesting story, which has been developing for a few years now. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have been following this since the very beginning. And let's move to Melbourne now and some news about the Holocaust Centre being relocated to a temporary location.
Well, in Melbourne, Amit, there's the latest on the Jewish Holocaust Centre. It's on the move. The centre will relocate temporarily to Caulfield for around 2 years very soon, while a dynamic new museum is being built at its Elsternwick location as part of a new Jewish cultural precinct. The museum's director, Jane Jotham, announced that in April, the museum will turn off the lights, and by May, most of the building at its Selwyn Street premises, except for a heritage facade, will have been demolished. She said, while the museum's public activities will be significantly curtailed during this time, its education program won't stop. They will still be offering public lectures from various academics, as well as survivor talks for the general public. And the premises will still continue to operate a Holocaust Resource Center for academic research and families, and it will be maintaining its archives as well. The new temporary location near Caulfield Railway Station, so it's quite convenient, and it'll be open also for schools, for school students to visit for those activities. One of the most significant undertakings is the extremely careful packing up of the archives. You can imagine they've got so many archives. A lot of them of the items are very fragile, dating back to wartime. And their archivist, Dr. Anna Hirsch, has a big job in front of her. She's got to, she's even making customized boxes for each sculpture or precious artifact, and making special pillows to pad the items so that they don't get damaged. Meanwhile, the museum's capital campaign is still running, and the museum is seeking funds to ensure that it can install and create the best museum possible in its, eventually in 2 years, in its new precinct.
Well, it's not easy to move a whole museum, especially when there are so many important artifacts that need special treat, as you mentioned. So let's hope the move will be smooth and easy. Let's talk now about the impact of the coronavirus on the Australian Jewish community. And just to prove how small our world is, there are some Australian Jews on the quarantined Princess Diamond cruise ship near Japan. Tell us more, Shane.
Yes, so as you can imagine, a lot in the mainstream media and a lot of what's on people's minds at the moment is this coronavirus that originated in China. A Jewish couple from Melbourne are actually currently in isolation aboard the Diamond Princess ship, which is a cruise ship, in lockdown off the Japanese port of Yokohama due to detection of this virus, now diagnosed with 130 of its passengers on board. So ready to disembark on the final day of their 14-day cruise last Tuesday, Adina and Les Morris, together with the other passengers, were told to return to their cabin and stay on the ship. Adina told us that's where all the drama started. And she said, we were told that we would need to be completely isolated until the 19th of February. Now, beyond that, we've been on the ship for 9 days, and we're both in our, you know, mid-70s, early 80s, and every day we've been issued with thermometers to measure all our temperatures 3 times per day. And if a reading goes above 37.5 degrees, it must be reported immediately. As days goes on, she told us, I'm becoming more anxious. Yesterday, she said, so last Monday, they took 65 people off the ship who had been infected. So you're always thinking, who is going to be next? Despite the alarm, Adina commended the staff on the Princess Cruises and the Japanese government with how they're dealing with it. They're providing plenty of food, and they're checking up on the patients, on the passengers every day. But she did add she's quite disappointed by the Australian government. She said there are 220 Australians on board, and not one of us has yet been contacted by the government. It's as if we don't exist, she said. And she claimed that other passengers from other countries have already been contacted by their respective governments.
That's a shame. Maybe someone from the authorities should be in touch with the Australians on board the Princess Diamond. And more on the virus, Shane. How is the AGN coping with the coverage of the outbreak? Are you guys busy on the topic, or we are not quite there yet?
It's not quite got to that stage yet. Hopefully it won't get to that stage. But we are hearing reports from Jewish Australians who are concerned and who have actually, in this situation is probably the most extreme and confronting situation Les and Adina are in. But there may be, you know, more of these kind of things happening over the next few weeks. I don't think this virus, I think it started at the end of December in China, and it's been spreading within China mainly. Luckily in Australia, we've got very good health facilities and controls. So touch wood, so far the effect in Australia hasn't been very great. But it is affecting travellers, Australians who are travelling overseas in Asia. And for a lot of them, I've even heard from a few people I know who have been traveling in Asia on business, and they've coming back, they've had to go into a sort of a self-imposed two-week period of quarantine where they can't even go to work or do things like that. So it is something that's on everyone's minds, I think. It's probably good not to be panicked about in any way, I think. I think there are good controls, like I said, in Australia. But we do have to pay attention to things like this, especially if you're in a bracket like you've got a pre-existing health condition, or you're the elderly and the very young children. They're kind of the people who are most at risk. I think for everyone else, it shouldn't be as much as a problem.
Okay, thanks for your input. And to finish off with some positive news and upcoming events in our community, there is a very important person arriving here in 2 weeks, the president of the State of Israel, Reuven Rivlin.
Yes, the president of Israel, Reuven Rivlin, is coming to Australia. He's going to be the keynote speaker at the UIA gala events in February 23rd in Sydney. And also at that function, there will be the famous Israeli musician Idan Reichel. He'll be performing on stage, so that's very, very exciting duo to feature in that event. And then later in March, there's going to be more guests and more UIA, a women's gala function with some incredible guests from former Shin Bet and Mossad agents and or staff members.
Wow.
So that's all very exciting. I must mention a very good news, good feeling kind of a little story is that in Israel, in one of the largest displays in history of Israeli solidarity with Australia, there was more than 1,000 Israelis came together and sung and danced in Israel, in Tel Aviv, to raise money for the Australian bushfire relief effort. The proceeds from the evening were added to the funds raised by JNF Australia and will be directed to the World Wildlife Fund's Australian Wildlife Recovery Fund.
Nice.
On behalf of a number of partner organizations there, Iran Doron, mayor of Ramat HaNegev, expressed his gratitude to the Australian Jewish community's continued support of Israel, and he told this large gathering in Israel, "Today we have an opportunity for all of us to say thank you. Your pain is our pain, and the least we can do is stand by your side during what you have gone through with the bushfires."
Thanks for sharing, Shane, and well said. And that's all the time we have for this week. Shane Desiatnik from the Australian Jewish News, thank you so much, and speak to you next time.
Thank you.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.